This morning I'll offer a couple of stories, again from this book, Tattoos on the Heart, The Power of Boundless Compassion. This is by Father Gregory Boyle. I read from this earlier in the month. He's a bodhisattva, I think, a Jesuit priest who has worked, now continues to work, I think for many decades, in L.A. and the central area, the neighborhoods with all the gangs in L.A. So a couple of stories from Father Gregory Boyle. And just to say, we are people of story. We love stories. And in this interweaving of emptiness and love, this practice of holding the world in a light way, and through that perhaps even deeper compassion. And so as I read these stories about real life people, real stories that happened, how is it to hold these stories infused with this sense of the unborn, the deathless, touched not by a kind of less importance, but in fact perhaps maybe even more. And we hold this world in this way, dependent, co-arising, everything infused with emptiness, with space, absence, love. This first story is about Scrappy. In March of 2004, Scrappy walks into our office, and I'm not proud to admit it. My heart sinks. From the perch of my own glass enclosed office, I can see Scrappy talking to Marcos, the receptionist, who is also from Scrappy's gang. He's apparently signing up to see me. I haven't seen Scrappy in 10 years, since he's been incarcerated all that time. But even before that, I'm not sure if he's ever set foot in my office. My heart is in some lower register. Let's just say Scrappy and I have never been on good terms. I first met him in the summer of 1984. I was newly ordained at Dolores Mission. So, yeah, I guess he's been doing this for more than 40 years. So at that time, Scrappy was 15 years old, and his probation officer assigned him to the church to complete his hours of community service. The chip located on his shoulder was the size of a Pontiac. I don't have to listen to you. I don't have to do what you say. Some 5 years later, I'm standing in front of a packed church, preaching at the funeral of one of Scrappy's homeboys. If you love Kuko and want to honor his memory, I say to the congregation, then you will work for peace and love your enemies. Immediately, Scrappy stands up and moves out of his pew and into the center aisle. All eyes are on him. I stop speaking. The eternal scowl I had come to know in that summer of 1984 is fixed on me as he walks straight ahead. We stand face to face. He mad dogs me with some intensity, then turns and exits the church by the side door. 3 years later, I'm riding my bike as I would in those days, patrolling the projects at night. I enter Scrappy's barrio, and there is a commotion. The homies have formed a circle, and clearly two of their rank are going head up. I break through the mob and indeed find Scrappy throwing down one of his own homies. I discover later that the beef was over a girl. I stop the fight, and Scrappy reaches into the front waist of his pants and pulls out a gun that he waves around wildly. The crowd seems to be more horrified than I am. There are great gasps and pleas. Hey, dog, damn, put the gun away. Don't disrespect G. Scrappy steadies the gun right at me and grunts a half laugh. Shit, I'd shoot his ass too. Are you getting a sense of what our relationship was like? So years later, when I see him enter my office, it takes me a moment, but I locate my heart hiding in Filene's basement. And Marcos intercoms me. Scrappy's here. Then his voice gets squeaky and tentative. You want to see him? Marcos knew enough that this would be in some doubt. Of course, send him in. Scrappy's not a large fellow, but there's no fat in his mid-sized build. His hair is slicked back, and his mustache is understated. He hugs me only because not to would be too awkward. We have, after all, known each other for 20 years. He sits and wastes no time. Look, let's just be honest with each other and talk man to man. You know that I've never disrespected you. I figure, why not? I'm going to go for it. Well, how about the time you walked out on my homily at Cuco's funeral? Or the time you pulled a cuete out on me? Scrappy looks genuinely perplexed by what I've just said and cocks and scrunches his face like a confused beagle. Yeah, well, besides that, he says. Then we do something we never have in our 2 decades of knowing each other. We laugh. But really, truly laugh. Head resting on my desk, laughter. We carry on until this runs its course. And then Scrappy settles into the core of his being, beyond the bravado of his chingon status in his gang. I've spent the last 20 years building a reputation for myself, and now I regret that I even have one. And then in another first, he cries, but really, truly cries. He is doubled over, and the rocking seems to soothe the release of this great ache. When the wailing stops and he comes up for air, he daubs his eyes and runs his sleeve across his nose. He finally makes eye contact. Now what do? I know how to sell drugs. I know how to gangbang. I know how to shank fools in prison. I don't know how to change the oil in my car. I know how to drive, but I don't know how to park. And I don't know how to wash my clothes except in the sink of a cell. I hire him that day, and he begins work the next morning on our graffiti crew. This next paragraph talks about God, and you can interpret God however you'd like. Scrappy discovered, as the texts say, that where he is, he's standing on holy ground. He found the narrow gate that leads to life. God's voice was not of restriction to shape up or ship out. Scrappy found himself in the center of vastness and right in the expansive heart of God, the sacred place toward which God had nudged Scrappy all his life, is not to be arrived at, but discovered. Scrappy did not knock on the door so God would notice him. No need for doors at all. Scrappy was already inside. Okay, I'm going to do another one. I'm sorry, the aversive types are like, no more. But I'm going to do one more. This also talks about God. And Rebecca, this is sort of in honor of Rebecca because she loves this story. She reads this a lot. So Father Gregory has gone up into the mountains. He was living in Bolivia early on in his days as a young priest. He was living in Bolivia, and at some point, there was a Quechua community, an indigenous community, high up in the mountains. This was a Quechua community located high above Cochabamba, whose indigenous folks harvested flowers for market. And so he's taken up in this, the back of this truck with health workers. Midway on the road, I decide to do an inventory of the contents of my backpack. I brought everything I need but my text. I don't have the words. At this point in my early priesthood, I couldn't wing Mass in English. The thought of doing so in Spanish was preposterous. I do have a Spanish Bible, so I frantically flip through the pages, trying to find any passages that sound like the words of consecration. We pull into a huge open-air landing, a field cleared of all crops, and many hundreds of Quechua Indians have gathered and set themselves down around the table, our altar. I hobble and fake my way through the liturgy of the word, aided by the health workers who read everything in Quechua. After the gentleman preaches, it is my turn to carry the ball. I'm like someone who's been in a major car accident. I can't remember a thing. When it's over, I'm left spent and humiliated. I'm wandering adrift, trying to gather my shattered self back together again. With my backpack snug on my shoulder and spirit deflated, I begin to make the long walk down the mountain and back to town. But before I leave the makeshift soccer field that had been our cathedral, an old Quechua campesino, seemingly out of nowhere, makes his way to me. He appears ancient, but I suspect his body has been weathered by work and the burden of an Indian's life. As he nears me, I see he is wearing tethered wool pants with a white button shirt, greatly frayed at the collar. He has a rope for a belt. His suit coat is coarse and worn. He has a fedora toughened by the years. He's wearing huaraches, and his feet are caked with Bolivian mud. Any place that a human face can have wrinkles and creases, he has them. He's at least a foot shorter than I am, and he stands right in front of me and says, "Tatai." This is Quechua for padrecito, a word packed with cariño, affection, and a charming intimacy. He looks up at me with penetrating, weary eyes, and says, "Tatai, gracias por haber venido." Thanks for coming. I think of something to say, but nothing comes to me, which is just as well, because before I can speak, the old campesino reaches into the pockets of his suit coat and retrieves two fistfuls of multicolored rose petals. He's on the tips of his toes, and gestures that I might assist with the inclination of my head. And so he drops the petals over my head, and I'm without words. He digs into his pockets again and manages two more fistfuls of petals. He does this again and again, and the store of red, pink, and yellow rose petals seems infinite. I just stand there and let him do this, staring at my own huaraches, now moistened with my tears, covered with rose petals. Finally, he takes his leave, and I'm left there, alone, with only the bright aroma of roses. For all the many times I would return to Tirani and see the same villagers over and over, I never saw this old campesino again. God, I guess, is more expansive than every image we think rhymes with God. How much greater is the God we have than the one we think we have? More than anything else, the truth of God seems to be about a joy that is a foreigner to disappointment and disapproval. This joy just doesn't know what we're talking about when we focus on the restriction of not measuring up. This joy is like a bunch of people lined up in the parish hall on your birthday, wanting only to dance with you. The God who is greater than God has only one thing on her mind, and that is to drop endlessly rose petals on our heads. Marinate in the vastness of that. It's been such a deep, deep honor to accompany you this month. And I really trust our auspicious connection. I trust it's there. And so thank you for your noble practice. And I'm so grateful to get to be walking this path, walking each other home, just right beside you.